How do you handle stressful situations? Like, do you keep your cool, or are you?
I mean, do you see all this gray hair?
Yeah.
That's for every situation.
I know. I can. Yeah.
One of the guys I used to work with at Life in Color, Patrick, like whenever a stressful moment would come up, he'd be like, "Yo, Eric, I just saw a gray hair pop out."
Oh, no. Hey guys, welcome back to Rave Culture Cast, your weekly guide to the EDM community, music festivals, and more. I am your host, Emma Kapotis. What is up? Welcome to the podcast. Happy Wednesday, you guys. Before we dive into things, I want to shout out one of our sponsors, Lunatics. If you guys know, Lunatics is one of my absolute favorite festival and beauty accessories. They make all the face gems, body stickers, hair accessories, hair extensions, glitter that you possibly need to complete your rave looks. I literally always have them in my bags with me. I never go to a festival without them. And they have such amazing new collections. They're always innovating really cute new designs. And we love to support small businesses in the dance music scene. So I want to shout them out. You guys can use my discount code EMMAK for 10% off your orders. So I'm going to leave that link down below if you want to check anything out from their new collections. You guys can always connect with us at Rave Culture Cast on all of the platforms. Come hang out on Facebook, Discord, all the things. You guys, appreciate you connecting with us, giving us a follow, subscribing, all of the things. All right, with all that out of the way, I want to introduce my guest, Eric Fuller, who I was super excited to have on here as an entrepreneur, as a business professional, as a, you know, fan of dance music and festivals. Eric Fuller has had a long and really interesting career in dance music. He is currently based out of Miami, Florida, and he is the founder of Blank Canvas, which makes these amazing, unique experiences. Again, based in Life, Florida, they also own other venues as well. So they own Celine in Orlando. They have also expanded into Jacksonville and to Nashville as well. But the bread and butter we're going to talk about today is their involvement in Miami Music Week. So they are producing so many events. They are connecting fans with dance music and curating these incredible experiences for you guys. So I want to talk a little bit about his career. We're going to talk about his early days where he was a founder of Life in Color, formerly known as Dayglow, which was personally my first rave I ever went to. So this is like a full circle moment. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about how he expanded into the dance music industry, working under SFX Entertainment. He was a co-owner in Space Miami for a couple years. And again, now he's heading Blank Canvas and they've got a jam-packed Miami Music Week coming up. So a ton of ground to cover here. He is a brilliant mind, and it was really awesome just getting to know him and learn, you know, his tips and tricks on networking, growing in the industry, overcoming hurdles in live event production, and how to market yourself as well. So tons of gems in here. Please share this with a friend if you guys enjoy it. Go support Blank Canvas and Eric's team. I'm going to leave links down below to their Miami Music Week events along with all their socials and everything. So go give them a follow and tell them I sent you. With all that being said, please join me in welcoming Eric Fuller to the podcast. Do it. Hey guys, welcome back to Rave Culture Cast. Today I am joined by Eric Fuller, who is the founder of Blank Canvas, a prominent event and production company based in South Florida. Eric has a colorful background in dance music. He has operated Life in Color, formerly known as Dayglow. He's expanded to work with SFX Entertainment, has been an entrepreneur owning multiple companies, had involvement in Club Space Miami, and he joins us now in the busiest month of the year. We have Miami Music Week kicking off in just a couple weeks here, and he has jam-packed events going on, so I'm super excited to have him on here to pick his brain about events, marketing, and all good things like that. So welcome to the podcast, Eric. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Emma. Appreciate you having me.
Of course. Yeah, I have to let you know, this is kind of like a full circle moment for me because my first rave that I ever went to was Life in Color.
Nice.
Which I'm sure you get that a lot, but yeah,
we get that a lot.
It's a gateway, which I appreciate. In 2011 in Trenton, that was my first like dance music event, really, which so this is like a full circle moment, which is awesome.
That's awesome. What year was that you went?
2011.
Okay. Yeah, we used to do pretty well in New Jersey. I get that from a lot of people and I've heard that over the years and yeah, I would agree. Life in Color was a great introduction to dance music for a lot of people. So
For sure.
Glad you got to check it out.
Yeah, no, I went to a ton of, and I think just like, so I was in college at the time. That was like the first rave that I really went to. And that was an introduction. I want to say the headliner was Fede LeGrand, I think, at the time. So nice. It was a good couple of years for music, good time to be in college. But I'm curious, like, how did you get involved in throwing events? Like, what was the first event you threw, even like pre Life in Color and Day-Glo?
It was at college. I was in, it's funny to say it, I was in a fraternity in college, and we used to organize like events. So we are like, whatever you call it, got kicked off of campus. Mm-hmm. And my thought was like, listen, like, we're still all friends. Like, we had a good network of people. I'm like, let's just keep doing the parties. Mm-hmm. So I kind of took it upon myself to continue doing events, and I kind of stumbled on really a way to make money, but I just had a great time doing it. So mm-hmm. I don't remember exactly like the first event, but it was in college. I was a junior at University of North Florida. Yeah. And we That's did like awesome. A, I don't know, some kind of theme party. Actually, it was at the Roxy. Sure. It was at this place called the Roxy. And I think it was like $20 to get in. And then you could slip the door guy another $20, and it was all mm-hmm. you could drink.
Yep.
Yeah. And the rest is history.
That's awesome. It's cool. I like to kind of like go through just kind of like step by step because like anybody else listening to who wants to get into dance music or like the music industry in general, there's just so many avenues and pathways you can go down to like look at where you are now today compared to like where this all stemmed from is pretty crazy. But I mean, paint parties at the time, like, I'm just curious kind of like how that came about as well. Like, I know you probably built up relationships and like you had an interest in throwing events and things like that. But like, how did that kind of era come about for you guys in those first few shows that you did? Like, what was the reception like to those?
So I used to do like there's two Day-Glos that were kind of happening. There was one mm-hmm. with a W and one with an O. I had the one with the O. Eventually I joined with the one with the W and
it
became Life in Color. But I had a roommate that really wouldn't leave me alone about the party. His name was Kyle Head. We call him K-Love. Shout out to K-Love. If you're in Miami, you might know him. He really was like, look, we got to do this paint party. He had went over to Florida State University, and he's like, I went to this paint party. It was crazy. It was black lights, and like, we got to do it. Mm-hmm. And he really wouldn't leave me alone about it. Cause at the time I was not really into dance music. I was just like getting introduced to it.
Sure.
He was really the one that just like wouldn't stop talking about it. And I had like seen some photos. I'm like, this actually looks like a good time. So, mm-hmm. It was really Kyle that kind of pushed me to do this event. And we did it. We used like our student loans to kind of fund the event, and a lot of people showed up, and it just kept getting like bigger and bigger. So that's kind of how I stumbled into that specific party.
Right. And when you're at such a young age, kind of like juggling this project as it continues to grow and gain traction, and now like you're touring across the United States and you're like hitting up colleges and things like that, like, how do you handle that at such a young age? And like, how quickly did you just have to like learn and adapt to everything happening around you?
Yeah. Well, the when it became like really more of like a business and let's go to the Day-Glo with the W now, mm-hmm. which everyone knows is Life in Color, that really started taking off. Man, it's been so long. I can barely remember, but I would say like 2011, 2010 is when it really started to mm-hmm. like take off. Like, we were touring in Florida and look, honestly, like, the answer is we just were young, ambitious group of guys that I don't think we were really paying attention so much. Like, especially in the early days, we were just mm-hmm. doing what we loved. Like, we genuinely loved throwing parties. I don't think any of us wanted to put a suit on and go work somewhere. That was like in 2000, that was right after what was 2008, 2009, the great financial, whatever it's called. Mm-hmm. So like, getting a job was not really the easiest thing to do at the time. Right. Especially like, you know, if you wanted to be in a specific industry or a career, like a lot of people weren't hiring. So yeah, I mean, we were just having a great time. We were figuring it out as we went along. We were passionate about it. And yeah, it was chaotic in the early days. We probably made a ton of mistakes, overspent on money, like overspent in certain areas that we really didn't need to, but we figured it out. And yeah, we just loved what we were doing. So
that's awesome.
We made it work.
Yeah. When you think about that time in your career, or just in your life, like what makes you smile when you think back on like some of those memories?
Definitely the people. Thinking about the people, we had a really amazing group of, we had an amazing team. Some of the people that worked with us, like they're at Insomniac now in really high positions. I know one of the guys that worked with us, Jan, he was like, he's just an example, but you know, he's one of the founders of Vibra Urbana, which is like a prominent Latin festival.
Awesome.
I know Josh Greenberg, like he's out at Another Planet Entertainment in on the West Coast in California. So I think about all those people that that really I think had an equal passion for the business, and yeah, like just had a great time. We had a lot of fun. So that's awesome. Thinking of the people and our team definitely makes me happy.
That's awesome. Yeah. And so kind of like after you wrap up that chapter, like what was the transition like after Life in Color? Like I believe was SFX, did they purchase Life in Color? Like they got involved as well, or like how did that transition happen?
Yeah. So we were acquired by SFX Entertainment. They had purchased like Disco Donnie, Electric Zoo. And that was really, and also that was definitely a new chapter because now we went from, you know, really like a group of young guys and men and women like running this company to we had, you know, like we had adults in the room now, basically. We were a publicly traded company. So we had to do everything from like report numbers, but that was a really, for some people, it was a tough transition. I really enjoyed it. I love like business and I love the business side of dance music. So I really enjoyed it, but yeah, we were like, there's a lot of really great brands and promoters. I became friends with, you know, for example, like Jeff Callahan from React Entertainment. He was one of the founders. I don't know if you remember that, that brand out of Chicago. Like he just came to visit my house a week ago with his wife.
That's
like
awesome.
I made a lot of good friends and met a lot of people through that process, but it was like a step up. It was like, okay,
right.
Being in dance music early on, it was a bit of the Wild West and you could kind of see it expand yet consolidate in terms of, you know, who's professional, who's not. So it was a really interesting time. But it was an amazing experience.
Cool. Yeah. And that time too, just like looking at the expansion of like live events in general, like even some of those first festivals, like thinking back on where they were at in like 2012, 2013, 2014 to the scale that they're at now, like I can't even imagine what it was like kind of being involved at almost like beginning stages where this like scene was exploding, obviously with like the EDM bubble that kind of was like bursting at the time. And then when did you move to Miami, or was that something that you had done during your Life in Color era, or is that a little bit after?
No, that was during Life in Color. We had decided to move the offices to Boca, which really was, we ultimately wanted to be in Miami. And once the company got to a point where we could financially make that move, we did. Yeah, that was like a couple years after being in Boca, we took it to Miami. So
awesome.
Yeah.
And then living in Miami, cause I'm like, I haven't been in a minute. I've done one, I think at least one Miami Music Week, but there's something about the city when you go there. And like seeing dance music thriving there right now, even just like makes me so happy. But when you kind of were coming up in the scene and everything, like what did you observe then compared to how the music scene has like developed now?
So this might sound a little weird, but I think that like the scene's definitely grown, but it's certainly consolidated. So there's fewer people. I think, you know, when I think back years ago, there's a lot of different smaller promotional groups. I think there are more venues. Real estate in Miami is really challenging. So I think to like own and operate a venue, you know, if you're not the landowner or have like a low basis in it, it's a little difficult. So, yeah, I mean, it's, Miami's a wonderful scene for music. It's definitely, I think, at the forefront of electronic, for sure. I mean, that's for sure.
Right.
But yeah, it feels like it just, to me, it feels like there's more fans and there's more of an audience, but it feels like there's fewer players, and there's fewer venues. And we're starting to see that kind of come back a little bit now. Like there's a couple new venues that have popped open, but you know, I can remember almost 10 years ago, we had venues all up and down the East Coast that you could really tap into. And I don't know why that is, to be honest, but that would be one of my observations.
Right. And was there ever a question for you to relocate at all? Or did you know, like, you guys wanted to be based in Florida and this was going to be home for you for a really long time?
Yeah. So, I think like, you know, we all were from Florida. So South Florida really just made sense. Like I was not from South Florida, so I had to make the move down here. But, Miami just felt like a place where it felt like the best spot to do business and dance music outside of, you know, LA and New York. So, and I think that every year that becomes more and more true. So
sure. Yeah. And I definitely want to get into Miami Music Week because you guys have so many exciting things going on. But I was just curious too, as far as your involvement with space, how did that kind of come about? What was your involvement? And then, any thoughts you have about kind of like the growth of space as well? Because similarly, I've only been once before, but it's something that I feel like just so many people continue to talk about. It's a part of the culture and it's really, really cool to see like all of the artists that have come there and the international talent that they're booking. It's amazing. So just curious about that chapter for you as well.
Yeah. I mean, that was one of my favorite chapters. It was right after, you know, Life in Color, and SFX had become this company Lifestyles. It's really the same thing. But I had become a partner in Space in 2018. I was close with David Sinopoli, who owns 3 Points and or one of the founders of 3 Points. We used to be pretty close friends. I used to go to his spot, Bardot, and we just kind of developed a relationship. And he approached me one day. He's like, listen, I got this opportunity to take over Space. Would you want to be involved? And I was like, yeah, absolutely. Wow. So yeah. I invested really at the time, which is a lot of money for me. Into the project and, you know, did as much as I could to help the business, everything from stuff like insurance and helped us get our ticketing deal. I was doing shows on the ground and on the terrace through Blank Canvas. So that was truthfully one of the best times of my life. I really enjoyed it. I don't really go to the venue anymore, but I love that place. And I think it's really important to the scene. I mean, I was married at Club Space. Literally the week after Music Week, we closed the club down and I got married there. So,
That's amazing.
Yeah. So it's, you know, I really don't go there anymore. There's probably a lot we can unpack there, but I don't really want to dive too much into it.
Sure.
But yeah, it's a magical spot. I hope it's there forever. And it was really an awesome time in my life. Like,
that's awesome.
Waking up at 6 in the morning, I'd go there with my now wife, we'd go and we'd dance and have some drinks. And that's the cool thing about that club. Awesome. Like you can go there completely sober and have a great experience. Because you can literally go at 6 o'clock in the morning. That's what I used to do. I'd go early in the morning. At least when I didn't have shows, I'd go, you know, catch Solomon for a couple hours. I'd go have coffee and breakfast all day. And then we'd go to the beach. And then I was in bed by like 8 o'clock on Sunday. So it was an amazing time.
It's like a lifestyle. See, that's where I fucked it up. I went for my bachelorette party and we were just all from New Jersey beginners. We were like, we got there at 11 PM and I knew I was in for it.
Oh yeah.
I was like, amateur. There's no way. Yeah.
You kind of learn the waves there. So there's like that 11 to like 2 a.m. crowd, 3 a.m. Yep. That's yep. like the, you know, that's, yeah. that's the amateur hour. And then you got yeah. the people that think that they're going to make it till sure. 6 o'clock. So they're like, oh, it's 3 o'clock, and they're the sloppiest.
Right.
And then you get the pros that come in at, you know, 4, 5, 6 in the morning.
Yeah.
One of my former partners, like, cause I used to try to do that. I would try to stay awake, and I don't
sure.
like, I don't drink or mm-hmm. do drugs at my venues or at my parties. I just do not do that.
Right.
I think that's something like really important for anybody who's listening that wants to be in this business. Mm. You will not make it if you do that kind of stuff.
Sure.
I mean, maybe you will, but anyone I've known that's lived like that kind of lifestyle in this business, usually it just doesn't last.
Yeah.
So anyway, he told me, he's like, you know, in his Italian accent, he's like, dude, just come in the morning, like wake up. Like, and I did. And I never looked back after that point. So.
Oh, that's awesome. See, we need, you need people to teach you the ways. This is like those moments. I have friends there, but if you're not from there and you go, like, I think I posted a clip from this podcast, like after I reviewed it saying that, and I honestly got so much feedback on it, which was crazy. And I was like, all right, I know I messed it up, guys. I have to have my redemption still, but I want to get into Blank Canvas because again, this is really exciting for me. Blank Canvas, like I've known your name for a really long time. Like I said, been to Miami Music Week before, and you guys have just like continue to grow and expand. It's really cool to see who you're booking and the venues that you guys have this year. So before we kind of dive into the history a little bit, like want to give you the platform, like what are you really excited about right now? Like how are things looking just in the weeks before we get into everything?
I mean, it's really just busy. You know, it's just, mm-hmm. there's a lot going on. We have, you know, at this phase where we've got most of our, you know, our staff's locked in, our vendors, we finalized our plans with the city. At this phase, we're really just focusing on ticket sales, marketing, and then right. like advancing with the artists. So making sure all the artists are sorted out. I mean, we're doing, I truthfully don't know the number
yeah.
of shows. It's probably over 30 at this point.
Sure.
But we're really just like dialing in the finer details. Mm-hmm. The lineups are booked, and I think everything's announced except for like one party.
Right.
And actually that one's announced. We just don't have the lineup. So the full lineup's not announced yet. So yeah, mm-hmm. it's really exciting. Like you can kind of start feeling it in the air here.
Yeah.
At least I do. I don't sleep. I'll wake up at like 2 in the morning and check on. I actually deleted the tickets because I would do that. Like
right.
agents will hit me up and be like, hey, can I get a ticket count? I'm like, dude, I deleted the app because
right.
I would wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning, like check ticket sales. Like, oh, did I forget my to-do list?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, a lot goes into it. And yeah, it's all hands on deck right now.
That's awesome to hear. I can't even imagine. But kind of like going back to the beginning, do you remember, like, what was the first Miami Music Week you ever attended? And like, what do you remember from that first experience?
I don't remember the year. It might have been 2010. We used to have a tent at Ultra when it was Dayglow.
Mm-hmm.
So I came for that. And I think the moment I probably remember the most was the Swedish House Mafia tent on the beach. That was just and that might have been a separate year. But man, it was such an epic party. I went to a pool party at the Surf Comer that Emmy Guerra was doing, which we actually now, programmed the Surf Comer, and Emmy's an amazing person. I spoke to him, you know, this last year, and he was like, dude, I'm actually really happy you're the one, you know, running the pool now. Cause
I
guess
awesome.
He had a fallout with the venue. I'm not sure exactly, mm-hmm. but we're really thankful to have that space. But those two parties, Emmy had a party there. I don't even remember all the artists, but it was just like, you know, one of my first times like going to a Music Week party and watching the sunset and all the artists. And I met people from all over the world that loved dance music. And then mm-hmm. that event, that actually was Emmy's as well on the beach, the Swedish House Mafia. That party was absolutely epic. Like your feet are in the sand.
Right.
And that was at just like really at the height of dance music. So a lot of memories there. And yeah, I'm really thankful that I'm now providing those same experiences to, you know, basically dance fans, just like I was 10 years ago attending the show.
Right. Right. Yeah, and it's cool to hear like kind of like how you fell in love with dance music as well. Like you said in the beginning, kind of not as much knowledge about it. You just wanted to like throw these events to where you are now. I believe you're a house head, correct? Is that favorite?
It's kind of evolved. I've always loved progressive house music. That's really been I've just always loved that music. But yeah, generally speaking, like I'm a big fan of Anjuna. Chris Lake is probably one of my favorite artists. Like when I first brought him to Space, like I pulled him aside. I'm like, dude, just want to thank you because you're one of the reasons I fell in love with this music. I'd say I'm more of a house head than anything.
Oh, that's such a cool, it's just really cool. And it's like inspiring to hear like you having those moments and like seeing just how you built that for yourself. And I'm sure like, what was the vision for Blank Canvas? Like having all these experiences you had that like led up to that point of wanting to start the company and then wanting to provide these events and experiences for people. Like what was the vision when you created the company?
I really just saw like a need for it. You know, at the time we were still a part of when Blank Canvas was founded, it was actually during my time at Livestyle. Mm-hmm. And we used to have this company called Committee Entertainment. We had done a bunch of, you know, we were involved in EDC Orlando from the start. A lot of people don't know that, but like we were really the boots on the ground, like mobilizing the audience and fans, like really involved in the college market. We helped start Sunset Music Festival, which I think they're officially like done in the market. So, and we were doing these tours all over the state of Florida. And I really felt like that part of the business was kind of gone. Like there were still promoters doing stuff, but I thought that we really needed that in Miami and truthfully, like throughout the state. So I just saw an opportunity. So we started that under the Livestyle SFX umbrella. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we started doing shows, you know, at Space and at other, when I was an owner there, I was doing shows there. And then we were doing, you know, pop-up events during Basel and Music Week. So the idea, the name I actually got from, I used to drive like the back streets home and there was this building that was being built and it was called like Canvas. And I kept like seeing it every day. So I was thinking about this like company and the idea and I thought about a name and I thought like, Blank Canvas would be great because it's kind of plays into the whole like life and color thing, you know, the paint, whatever. And I really wanted it to be, you know, I wanted that to really stand for, you know, like I see us as we're really like the medium to the fans, to the artist, and everything that goes with it. So, I think that. Really more to your question, like I just saw a really great opportunity and we moved on it.
Cool. Yeah. And even like kind of getting caught up to today, like a huge part of this scene obviously is kind of like relationship building, networking, collaborations, like just networking with people and getting your name out there and then making those connections. So how have those connections that you've made, you know, throughout time or networks you've built up, you know, helped the success of Blank Canvas?
I mean, relationships are really everything in this business. You know, as a promoter, you have to keep your word with the artists and you have to keep your word with fans. Mm-hmm. If you don't do those two things correctly, you're not going to make it.
Right.
I have not known too many people that do those things and are successful. And I've seen people, you know, basically, you know, burn themselves out of this business by not respecting those two things. So, I mean, like early on with Life in Color, I was really blessed. Like we got to travel all over the world. So, and all over the United States. So like I can pick up the phone and, you know, call the promoters in Boston or in Texas. Mm-hmm. Like I got to work with really the best people all over the country and in some cases the world. So those relationships, definitely. I mean, still today, like I'll get phone calls from people that we did shows with like, hey, I'm managing this artist now. Can you help me? And we'll do our best to do that. They're really important and very thankful for the Rolodex that I have and the people that I've, you know, got to work with over the years.
Do you have any tips for people for networking during Miami Music Week? Cause even like, as somebody trying to grow in this space, I found myself wondering that there's just an energy, like you said, there's people who are enjoying themselves, who want to have like downtime and are connecting with friends or people that they already know. And then, you know, you want to make introductions. So for you, like, how do you prefer to be approached, and any tips for people who want to like get into the scene that want to start networking in a couple weeks?
So I think for Music Week, obviously, like, maintain, like, I would recommend it's probably not an easy thing to do, but if you're coming here with the intention to network, at least for me, it's like, I don't want to talk to you if you're super drunk or on drugs. Mm-hmm. Like, I've actually had that happen to me before, and I'm just like, dude, like, I don't have time for that, especially yes. during, I don't like that in any setting. Mm-hmm. But especially during Music Week, it's a huge turnoff for me.
Sure.
I would say that, like, don't try to hop around and go everywhere. I see that a lot with younger people in the business that are like trying to make a name for themselves or network. They think that like they need to hop everywhere. But if you just stay put at one venue, you're going to realize that all those people are doing the same thing. So you should just stay where you're at. Like, I would recommend during the daytime, maybe pick one or two parties, stay there, you know, hang out for a few hours, and the same thing at night. If you're bouncing around from venue to venue, I don't know. I just think you're going to see the same amount of people if you just stay where you're at, because everyone else is doing that. So yeah, stay put and, you know, have a good time.
Awesome. I appreciate the tips though on, you know, either it's being sober and knowing how to pace yourself. For sure, because I think like it's probably so easy to ruin a reputation, or exactly, or even just how you treat people. You never know who you're talking. You never know who you're talking to. And like, I know for me, my mom drilled into our heads, like, treat people the way you want to be treated, like, no matter who you're talking to. And I think that's like such a huge part of it as well. And I'm sure, like you said, you met people who you worked with in the beginning stages or at jobs where you were grinding and coming up, who are heads of things now, running labels, like whatever they're doing, who are in major positions and having that great foundation with them to start. You just never know when that's going to come back around too. So I feel like it's just important to just be a good person at the end of the day as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, those are a must. Those are all a must.
Beautiful. And then kind of like the glaring thing about Miami Music Week, you can see kind of these flyers or schedules. You can go on the website and just see this like never ending list of events that are happening, which can be overwhelming. You know, for consumers looking at it, especially people getting into the scene, it's just like, how do you pick? Like, what is speaking to you? What looks like it's exciting to you? So for you guys, like, how do you stand out on, you know, against the competition and other events happening? Like, is there any tactics that you guys use to make your events appealing to fans?
Well, I think first off, shout out to our marketing team, Paul Reed, who heads that up, who's, you know, one of the co-founders of the company. He does a phenomenal job with the marketing. I mean, we have, and the rest of the team, Justin, Cameron, Gianni, Carly, like, couldn't do it without them. But yeah, I mean, I think that, like, look, what, like I said this before, like, we try to, our job here is, we believe anyways, to, you know, connect the fans with the artists. So as far as like standing out, obviously we're looking for really what the market like wants. Like, we're looking at, you know, the best possible venue for the artist. So like, for example, we might have an artist that we know can sell 10,000 tickets, but they want a smaller, intimate play. So our job as promoters is to make that match kind of happen and then present it as best we can to the fans. And I think the rest kind of sorts itself out. There's a lot of stuff you can do technically with ads and whatever. Our approach at Blank Canvas has always been to be as authentic as possible and really just do the right thing. You know, like, if you have a canceled event, refund your ticket holders.
Right.
If somebody can't make it because they had a death in their family, like, refund the buyer, and just provide the best possible experience that you can. Like, obviously it's a business, so you got to approach it like that. But
sure,
you know, we always try to, you know, put our best foot forward with production and staffing and making sure that we have enough bars and restrooms and they're clean and there's a place to wash your hands. Like, you'd be surprised. Like, a lot of people don't do that well. And by people, I mean promoters. And I think that over time, people pick up on that. And
right.
I drill that into my team all the time. It's like, just do the right thing. And over time, you're going to win. And right. I think, you know, we've been at it for, you know, for years now. And I think people have grown to understand and recognize our brand. So when they see a party that we're throwing with our logo on it, I think people, you know, they connect with that and they say like, look, mm-hmm. we trust that company. I know like during COVID when we had to cancel 20 something events, which right. was one of the worst days of my life, we refunded everybody within a week, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It was really tough financially. But we made it work and we're still here today because of it. I know a couple right. other promoters that did the exact opposite and they're no longer here. So,
wow.
Yeah, I think that like, again, we pick the best possible talent that we think our fans want. We try to do our best to like work hand in hand with the labels, the agencies to help them like create their vision.
Right.
And then we just present it in the best possible way that we can to fans.
Sure. That attitude is fantastic. That's really, like, honestly, really awesome to hear, because I do think that sometimes there could be people who are going for the money grab or something like that, or not even thinking about the one-to-one interaction, like you just mentioned. Like, so I do community management for Beatbox Beverages. That's my full-time job. So, like, it's my job to talk to fans every single day. I'm on Discord, like, our ambassadors. I run that program and like that's making cool. sure that every single person feels heard and has a good experience with our brand is like the number one thing. So exactly that, like taking care of your customers, because you, yep. again, you just never know, like they're going to spread that word to friends, family, their networks and things like that. So I think that is like an awesome attitude to have, to make sure that they're having the best possible experience with your brand overall, in hopes that they'll definitely come back if that's the way that they're, you know, they're being treated if they can't make an event. But I think it stands out. I think the curation, the choices of events, like you said, the venues, you mentioned a lot of these things are kind of buttoned up already, but when you're planning the Miami Music Week events, like what limitations are you working within? Because I'm sure people see the events at the end of the day and it looks glamorous and it's amazing, but they don't see all the shit that you guys go through on the daily basis. So what's that like?
I mean, where do you want to start?
Right.
I mean, it's like, you know, we really look to align with like-minded people. So a lot of the venues we work with, I've known some of them for years now. I mean, mm-hmm. for example, like Mana Wynwood, we did a Life in Color there years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a relationship I've had for years, and, you know, right. we take good care of their venue. And in return, we get the dates that we want. So,
right.
Yeah, I mean, it's Emma, it's everything, like the city yeah. dealing with that. I think over the years, that's been really challenging, not in Miami, but in Miami Beach, it's been mm-hmm. definitely more difficult.
Right.
There's been a lot there. And I think a lot of it has to do with the pressure that they have with spring break.
Mm-hmm.
But you'd be surprised. Like we literally go through like a whole building permit just to build a stage. Like we wow. have to follow the same regulations as like you would any, like you're building mm-hmm. anything else.
Right.
Obviously like here in Miami, we have hurricanes. We don't have them in March, but we still have mm-hmm. to build based on like hurricane yeah. standards, which makes right. no sense, but that's the world we're living in. So
right. whatever.
Yep. But yeah, it's so much. It's so much.
Sure. And I'm sure too, I'm sure you guys have down pat, like year over year, you have some expectations of hurdles that might pop up, but I'm sure you deal with things all the time. Like, I feel like I've seen, you know, artist visas not coming through last minute, or like people not being able to make the show and things like that. How do you handle stressful situations? Like, do you keep your cool, or are you...
I mean, do you see all this gray hair?
Yeah.
That's for every situation.
I know. I can. Yeah.
One of the guys I used to work with at Life in Color, Patrick, like whenever a stressful moment would come up, he'd be like, yo, Eric, I just saw a gray hair pop out.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I mean, it, I do my best. You know, mm-hmm. I've learned over the years to try to stay calm. When I was young in my career, I used to definitely freak out, which is not the right thing to do.
Right.
You know, at the end of the day, like especially if it's your event and you're the producer or the leader of whatever situation it is, like you got to stay calm. I mean, I think I'm generally a little more of an intense dude.
Sure.
So I kind of come off that way, but I do my best in stressful situations to just try to remain as calm as possible. And I might vocalize to my team here and there with a little more energy, but you know, externally, I try to keep it calm. But I mean, last year, my wife went into labor like 2.5 weeks early with my son. On the phone, like she's just getting her whatever it was called done. I don't even know. And I'm like in the car on the phone with the city. They're like, we can't grant you a 5-day permit because the city has open, the hotel has like open permits. And I'm like, listen, my wife's going into labor in the next 24 hours. Like, we got to figure this out. Like, that's the kind of stuff that's happened over the years.
Yeah.
Music week. And like, yeah, people forget. Like people, I feel like a lot of fans just like, they have no idea. They have no idea. Like, we're
1,000%.
Everybody behind the scenes. Like, we're people too. We have families, we have lives. So we're dealing with that. And then we're also like dealing with these events, which are really, they're volatile. Like, they're, you got so many things to worry about. Tickets, permitting, staffing. Is someone going to call out? You mentioned artist visas. That's actually not been as big of a deal lately.
Right.
But yeah. Look, you just figure it out. You just figure it out.
No.
The show
I'm so
has
glad
to
you
go
said,
on.
Exactly. You're problem solving. Yeah, exactly. You're wearing many hats and problem solving and being the person people come to is one of them. But yeah, no, that's literally why I do my podcast, is honestly representing the fan side and educating people and getting them excited about dance music and feeling included in it. But then also, just as I've had experiences on the other side of things too, it's just been like, oh my God, it's so eye-opening to see like the grind that goes into it and all the things behind the scenes. And like, it for me, it didn't lose any magic. I still love attending the events and everything just as much, but it's been just such a learning experience to see the other side. And I kind of want to wrap up asking you a little bit about the marketing, because that's something I'm like super, super interested in and passionate about. But
got it.
As far as you mentioned your marketing team, but how has like influencer marketing played a role in what you guys are doing? And do you have an ambassador program, a street team, anything like that, to kind of like help spread the word in addition to like the traditional marketing that you guys do?
We do have some influencer marketing. Like I said, Paul handles all the marketing stuff. I think I'm really blessed to have him as a business partner and a friend and helping run this company, because that's the only part of the business that I say that I don't even, I'm involved in it, but doesn't keep me up at night because I trust what he does. I'm pretty sure we have an influencer program. Our approach with Blank Canvas has always been like the brand first, you know, like a lot of promoters years ago, they would do this thing where they would, you know, you'd build out your ticket scaling, you'd put tickets on sale, and then you'd like instantly discount it with like codes and $5 off. And then you have to pay the person $5. So we've kind of like, we scrapped that years ago. And we're like, look, we're going to offer what we think's fair, what the market will dictate, and the rest is going to work itself out over time. And we stuck to that. And there's moments when we're like, oh, should we kick back to that? And we didn't. And I think it was really smart of us to not do that, because people see the brands, they see the shows that we're doing, they know it's quality across the board. The influencer stuff, you know, I know we have some, but I don't think it's nearly as much as probably I would even think. It's just the right ones.
Right.
And, you know, exactly the deals we do with those people, I'm not entirely sure. I just know we have a few of them.
Cool. Yeah. No, I think it's definitely something like I've been exploring, just because I think just the way marketing is changing and what people are looking at. I think even like more community marketing, like you're just seeing so many more people. I think like even with the introduction of TikTok shop, yeah. And like anybody can be a creator or sell a product or something like that. And there's that trust that people build up when it's like a face that they know, or, you know, again, they like trust their word or they relate to them in some way. And it's like, oh, hey, if that person is recommending an event, like I really like what they do and I like, we have similar tastes, so I think I'll enjoy their event as well. So yeah, just curious if that kind of played a role and kind of like rounding things out here. Oh yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that I think there's definitely a place for that. Obviously, mm-hmm. you know, there's like, I have friends that are considered like influencers and, you know, they're good people and they mean well. One of my closest friends, Lee Asher, he has this project called the Asher House where he literally like, he traveled the entire country in an RV, like rescuing dogs. And he made it happen. And I mean, he has like, I don't know, millions of followers. He was on the Ellen Show or Oprah or one of those two. I don't remember.
Right.
but like, you know, he's somebody that I personally know. And when he puts a product out, like it comes from a good place. Sure, he gets paid mm-hmm. for it, but that was his sacrifice for what he created. So,
right.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a place for it. You know, how authentic everyone is. Again, I think over time, people kind of figure out who's authentic sure. and who isn't. So
for sure.
We try to stick to those.
Definitely. And then I guess post Miami Music Week, when you guys are wrapping things up, one, I want to know how you unwind. Do you get to go on a vacation after?
Yeah.
Do you get a break?
Well, I have two children.
How old?
So my daughter is 3 and my son will be 1 in March. He's a Music Week baby.
That's awesome. My son is 6 months, so I'm right behind you.
Oh, wow. There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I would love to go. I love to surf. Like, I love the ocean. And I'll probably take a little surf trip if I can.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then honestly, like, I just want to spend time with my kids. So I'll definitely like take a couple days, go to the ocean. That resets me. And then, mm-hmm. you know, there's still a whole nother side of this too. Like, again, this is stuff that people probably don't know, but we spend 6 months, at least 6 months mm-hmm. planning Music Week, right? And
right.
then you have three days of load in. Then you have the events, which are from noon to 5 a.m.
Right.
Right. And you do that for 5 days. And then you have a couple days of load out. And then I've got to unwind all the events. So I have to pay mm-hmm. vendors, settle things, get equipment around. There's at least a month or two of like post work that goes into this.
Wow.
So yep. I'll take like a quick break, do some surfing, go to the beach, spend time with my kids, just mm-hmm. try my best to unwind. And then a week or two later, I'm back at it, like making sure all of our staff get taken care of, mm-hmm. paid out, artists are paid, and just, yeah, cleaning it all up.
Right. So. Right. No, it's cool. Thank you for shedding a light on everything going on. And yeah, I have newfound appreciation for parents and parents who juggle you know, work, but also like the nightlife industry is a tricky thing too as well. Like, your hours are different, you work weekends, it's a lot to juggle that with like little ones as well. So it's I see you
when I feel you no, please. So are you coming down this year?
Not so this year I'm doing Beyond Wonderland for the first time with Beatbox. Beatbox is sponsoring Beyond. So I'm going with Beatbox to like work that. But next year, next year I need to come back. Yeah.
Okay. Well, let us know when you're here so we can take good care of you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. And yeah, I guess lastly, what is the future of Blank Canvas? Like, I know you guys you're based in Florida, but I believe, are you guys expanding to Nashville as well? Or has that already happened?
That's already happened. Again, another Life and Color connection, Cameron, mm-hmm. Who's one of he's quickly becoming our lead talent buyer. Cameron Innes, he used to work for us at Life and Color. He moved to Nashville and Paul kind of mentioned it one day, like, hey, you know, this guy Cameron, he's in Nashville. He's really hungry to do stuff. And I'm like, I kind of remember him. He's a good kid. So we had a conversation and I actually have some like family that moved to Nashville. So I'd mm-hmm. been spending time up there and thought it was a really cool, that's actually Cameron calling me right now. I thought it was a really good market and a really good opportunity and felt there was had not been served properly. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we decided to do our first show and we definitely didn't make money. And, you know, flash forward to today, I think we've really gained the trust of the market. We have a couple deals with venues where we exclusively buy. We just announced like 2 days with Zed's Dead.
Awesome.
We brought a ton of great artists there. We have a ton of great artists in the future. So mm-hmm. yeah, the future, so we're really active there. The future for Blank Canvas is actually going to be still the touring that we're doing, but we are in the process of opening venues. So we mm-hmm. just bought Celine Orlando,
awesome,
in Orlando, Florida. Mm-hmm. It's a 700 cap venue. So I bought that personally with some other partners, and then awesome. Blank Canvas has the bookings there. So we're really, really excited about that. And then we're planning to do stuff outside of the venue, building a venue in Jacksonville, Florida, which will be ready in September. That's cool. Another market. I went to school there, UNF. Mm-hmm. So that's very like, it's a very special place to me. And like, I've always dreamt to do something there.
Sure.
So that will be opening in September. That'll be like 1,000-ish cap venue. And then we haven't announced this yet anywhere, but we are opening mm-hmm. a venue in Miami.
Amazing.
Yeah. It will not be open 24 hours. But you know, I'm not looking to compete in that mm-hmm. category. We want this to be, we used to have a venue here called Grand Central. That was just a great little live venue. You could see everything from a dance show to a live band. And that's really what I want for this space. Mm-hmm. really want it to be a place where any promoter is welcome to do shows,
right.
whether that be dance music, comedy, rock, hip hop. Like, we want it to be open to everyone. I think it's like,
sick.
I think it's really important for touring to exist.
Mm-hmm.
And you need these smaller venues, which the category we're in, that 1,000-ish range, is considered mm-hmm. smaller venues.
Sure.
It's really the breeding ground for the future. So
mm-hmm.
we're making those investments, and that's the future. We have a couple bigger projects we're going to announce after Music Week. So you'll hear awesome. About those soon, but yeah, we're going to keep doing what we're doing and connecting the dots, connecting fans with artists, and giving everybody the best possible experience.
That's so awesome. And where can people connect with you or connect with Blank Canvas? Anything else you want to plug before I let you go?
No, our on our Instagram and Twitter, it's Blank Canvas. I do not have Twitter personally. I have an Instagram. It's just at Eric Fuller. I don't have a TikTok. We have that, Blank Canvas does. But again, mm-hmm. it's never about me. It's about the brand.
Sure.
But yeah, if anybody has any questions or whatever, feel free to drop me a note. I don't always check social media, but mm-hmm. I do my best. So I'm happy to lend a hand where I can.
Beautiful. Yeah. And I'll link everything down below. If you guys are going to Miami Music Week, like, definitely check out the events. It's going to be an amazing experience. So I'll list the events with all the tickets if you guys want to check anything out. Eric, it was awesome learning from you. I want to thank you for what you're doing for the dance music community and for fans of live events. It's like really, really cool and inspiring to see everything that you've done in your career. I'm excited to follow along with it. And I hope you have an incredible Miami Music Week and you get to enjoy yourself and not too many gray hairs this year. We're going to pray for the best.
Yeah. Thank you, Emma. I appreciate it. And thank you for what you do as well.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Let's definitely stay in touch, and everybody go give a follow and support, and I will chat with you soon.